Hi, so we are recording now. So my name is Kayla Wheeler, and this is Melvin Wilson, a part of Built Baltimore. And the date is September 11th, 2020, and we will be talking about Built Baltimore's COVID relief work. So thank you so much for joining me, Mr. Wilson, Melvin.
Sure.
So could you tell me a bit more about your organization? What did you focus on before the coronavirus, and just how did you get started off as an organization?
Sure. I'm co-director of an organization called Turnaround Tuesday, which is a part of Build. We're a program of Build. It's a jobs movement that we've helped over the last 6 years, 860-some people in Baltimore obtain livable wage jobs. About 65% of the people that we work with are ex-offenders. The other 35% of people that are either unemployed or underemployed. So we were doing this before COVID hit. When COVID hit, what we were able to do is to continue to operate. Certainly, we did a lot of our work virtually as opposed to in person, which really dampers the work because we see people. And it's hard seeing people the same way on a computer. But we were able to continue to provide services, even to the point that since COVID, we've helped 65 people get livable wage jobs. So we have stayed engaged with our folks. And this opportunity, I think, will really help us to keep people employed, one, and to assist people that may have lost their jobs, or again, and also people that still are looking for employment.
Is there a particular industry that you focus on getting people involved in?
Sure. I would say about 60% of the jobs that we've helped people get are in hospitals, healthcare, from entry-level positions to positions as community health workers, peer recovery specialists. Again, a large part of our job. We have strong relationships with the anchor institutions in Baltimore, like Johns Hopkins and the University of Maryland and MedStar Hospitals.
So I was wondering if you could tell me a bit more how the coronavirus has affected your organization and your members. So you talked a bit about having to move everything online and how that goes against the nature of your organization. But are there other ways that your organization has been affected?
Sure. So again, where this opportunity has helped out is that a lot of people, and we're seeing that even in our school systems, that people, particularly in Baltimore, many don't have the equipment even to go into a Zoom call or the connectivity. Even in Baltimore City, there's a huge connectivity issue. So we were able, through this opportunity, to purchase Chromebooks where we can help folks to be able to not to miss a beat, to be part of the meetings that we're having, the trainings that we're doing. Also in providing folks with protective equipment. Again, a lot of people, you know, we take things for granted in life that, you know, just a simple fact, even buying a mask could be an issue for folks. So this is an opportunity to help to keep our community safe, to educate them on what's important, how all of us will protect each other by wearing masks and, again, and gloves and protective equipment. So, again, we've seen more so even – so we have a case manager who really has been on the ground and can see where people are personally affected by coronavirus, you know, where it's affected not just them, their children, and entire household. I'm actually a father of a 12-year-old, and virtual learning is – it's not difficult for him because he's a pretty bright kid. Mm-hmm. Where it really affects him is that this is a young man who really does well in school. He's at like a 95 average student. And at the end of the year, they gave everybody a pass-fail grade. Mm. So his hard work didn't pay off, where he got the same grade as somebody that just got by. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so our people are affected. It's affected entire families. At some point, the transportation industry had shut down. You know, people, we have, as part of Build did a food distribution along with Johns Hopkins, and we fed over 500 families, and we did it for 16 weeks. So, again, being on the ground, understanding what the needs of the community are, and that's what Build does as organizers on the ground. They go out, literally go door to door and find out what people's needs are. So we've been a beacon of light for so many, and this opportunity certainly broadens that.
So how has have your new initiatives been received by the community, especially people associated with the organization? Because it seems like you're really feeling a gap that maybe the city is not able to.
Right. The city hasn't filled a gap in a long time. I'm sorry. the people are very appreciative. Again, I could probably go into my computer pull up emails where people have responded. They're very thankful. You know, we're certainly not an organization that looks for people to say thank you. We look just to be a help for folks, and people really appreciate it. They understand that we're genuine. And again, when you come and knock on their doors, even during this period, that says a lot about who you are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we just really have a connection with folks, and we see people first. Never judgmental, never making any, you know, remarks that people feel like that you're giving them a handout. That's never from the approach that we come. We're just here to look out for each other and to be an assistance to each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you have an idea of how many Chromebooks you were able to give out?
So far, we've given out 4. Mm-hmm. You know, again, what we had to do, once we purchased the Chromebooks, we had to just make sure everything's in place. Mm-hmm. We can track them and things like that. But 4 so far, but there are others that we need to get to.
Okay. And are you able to continually give out PPEs, or was that more of a one-time initiative?
Continuously.
That's awesome.
Yes. That's awesome. Definitely.
And are you working with any other organizations? I know you mentioned some of the hospitals like Johns Hopkins. How are you able to raise all of these funds and purchase these goods?
So again, BUILD is an organization of organizers, so they do a lot of relational work. So we have strong relationships with the leadership of these institutions, mm-hmm. and have done a lot of things over the years, working together. So again, those leaderships, we're one of the organizations that they come to in crisis like these. So they know, again, that they exist in Baltimore, but may not be as strong on the ground as an organization like BUILD, which are on Tuesday.
Awesome. So how has your organization maintained a sense of community over the past few months?
Again, just being on the ground and people knowing that we're an organization that they can come to. Mm-hmm. Again, BUILD as an organization has been around 40 years. So, you know, we're not new kids on the block, and we've done major accomplishments throughout the city that have had implications throughout the country. Living Wage Bill was a BUILD initiative. College Bound was an initiative that BUILD was part of. So again, having that trust and being part of over 40 institutions across the city really gets us connected where we're trusted and people understand who we are and what we're going to deliver.
Mm-hmm. What other nonprofits do you collaborate with?
So the hospitals, we work with some really good, so we work with churches. Mm-hmm. So even Turnaround Tuesday, our site where we operate on is actually in Zion Baptist Church in East Baltimore, mm-hmm. which is also a BUILD institution. So those relationships, and we operate out of church because people, they trust the church. So, you know, it has some integrity there where they may not trust that we're in a building downtown. It's not a real connection. We feel mm-hmm. it's important. So churches, other organizations, there are other workforce development entities in Baltimore that we work with, Living Classrooms, Center for Urban Families, just to name a few. But we do a lot within BUILD, within the structure of BUILD, but we do work with other partners. The police department, we do some work with the police department, parole and probation, institutions like that.
And so about what percentage of the people you serve are Black or people of color?
95%.
95%?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you talked about moving over to Zoom. Through these Zoom meetings, have you been able to develop any new programs or initiatives that are just happening on Zoom?
Sure. So our biggest, as we call it, our biggest sauce is what we call our essential skills training, mm-hmm. where we dig deep in folks and help them find their agency. And that's so one thing I think what I didn't tell you, share with you about Turnaround Tuesday is that at these institutions where we put people into work, We have about an 84% retention rate over 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's because of the strong essential skills training that we conduct. So we shifted that into Zoom, which is difficult because we do role playing, we do all that. It's not the same where you're in person, but we know we had to continue to do it to prepare folks to be successful in their jobs. So just shifting to the Zoom model, I think we got it down now where we would do 30-hour sessions, which would be over a two-week period. We do it in 4 days on Zoom, over 4 hours a day. So 16 hours on Zoom as opposed to 30 hours in person.
Mm-hmm.
So because one, people's attention span, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but people can't sit on a Zoom call for 8 hours. I can barely do a Zoom call for 2 hours. just understanding the dilemma, people have kids and distractions that people are dealing with in the background, and just educating folks that, you got to block out the next 2 hours and you got to let your family know that you're on a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. That sounds easy, but it's not as easy as we want it to be.
So you talked about the skills. Are you including now more skills around using the internet and social media, just things that they might have to do with jobs that they're getting because of the pandemic?
So, yes. So, Pete, to one of the tracks of jobs that we have been attached to is contact tracing
mm-hmm.
for COVID. And just the whole process of even applying for these jobs is completely different than what we're used to. So people now are actually doing videotaping themselves for the interview process, which is different, And so, again, that's a training that we had to prepare them to be able to do that. And, even how do you, what's the proper way to doing a video, videotaping yourself where people understand or the questions that you're answering. And it's not necessarily talking to a person directly. So that's uniquely different for folks. So just really kind of navigating through the changes that this COVID has brought towards our people.
Mm-hmm. And so what is about the average age of people that participate in the program?
I would say between 25 and 45.
Okay.
We have as young as 18, as old as 76.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And have you seen any differences in how they've responded to the pandemic based on age or even the social distancing measures?
That's a really good question. So one part of what we're doing is making sure we educate folks on social distancing and wearing a mask. I think our people for the most part have certainly embraced it and understood the severity of not doing these things. We live in Baltimore as a city, particularly Baltimore City, that has a lot of positivity rates. We are doing our best to educate people how important it is to follow the rules. And again, I think Zoom has helped us to do that.
Okay, that's really awesome. So what would you say is the number one biggest struggle for your organization because of the social distancing measurements? Is it primarily not being able to reach out to people one-on-one?
Well, we're able to reach them one-on-one. It's just not being in person, not having that touch of folks. And not, I don't mean that in a physical standpoint, but to see, you can assess somebody literally by just watching them and seeing their struggles before they even open their mouth. And when people come to us, many of them are broken. Many of them have been turned down. They've been to every workforce development entity in the city with no jobs. A lot of them don't have hope. And then to try to give them some sense of assurance over a Zoom call is not the same as being with somebody in person and where they can really see that you're genuine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so how do most of your members find out about your organization?
It's by word of mouth. We don't have to recruit, that's for sure. Before COVID, we were seeing about 120 people every week. It really is mostly people passing the word that they had success at Turnaround Tuesday getting a job.
That's awesome. And have the numbers increased since the pandemic started?
I would say I would say it's probably similar, the same, but in reality, it's probably more because most people aren't used to doing things this way, and to still have the same volume of people just says a lot about the word of mouth and the work. Mm-hmm. So I would say right now we're probably seeing the same amount of people or engaging the same amount of people.
Okay. All right. So how would you, and this is kind of part of the goal of this project, is to get a broader understanding of how people in Baltimore and beyond are dealing with the pandemic, but also how they feel that the government has responded to the pandemic. So I wanted to see, how would you rate Baltimore's response to the coronavirus?
I'm just going to be flat out honest. I think the response has been less than acceptable. Mm-hmm. Particularly, again, we were part of the whole trying to get, being a pipeline for people for contact tracing. And that process has been slow. And I think that's going to be something we're going to look at 6 months or a year from now, saying if we were a little more aggressive on this, we could have, made a difference. I think that, to the mayor's credit, he's a little behind the governor in releasing some of the restrictions. That's only, I think, because Baltimore continues to have a lot of positive COVID testing. But, just as it's in difficult times to see your city shut down. The norm norm now is staying home watching television, where people, used to enjoy a better quality of life. But I guess life itself is more important. So I understand it. But just knowing that, I think the city, I give them a C probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what could the government do differently for the pandemic to give it higher than a C?
I think they can communicate better. And again, they have provided some resources. Again, they've done food distributions, certainly not allowing people to be evicted has been helpful. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't know how helpful that's going to be on the back end when people got to catch up. I don't know what that's going to look like. I think we're going to see a lot of people getting evicted. Mm-hmm. But, just for putting some parameters in place that do protect folks, I think has been helpful. Like, I know transportation at one time was free for a while. So there were some things that were put in place, I think, that have been helpful. It's just not communicating it well, I think, is one of the downfalls.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you see the role of nonprofits during this moment of time, especially people who are actively involved in the community?
I can only, for the most part, speak about Build and Turnaround Tuesday. I just know that this is something that we're positioned to always be ready to do. Again, having relationships on the ground, relationships with folks, organizing people has been something that we've always done. We had the unrest after Freddie Gray in Baltimore. We were on the ground with folks, and that's when we really found out that jobs was an issue. It wasn't so long. People just didn't have opportunities. I think the nonprofit's job is to really stay engaged with people, be supportive when they can, to go after resources that are available to assist people. Because again, most of the time it takes resources. I said, absence of resources, you're just a piece of communication. So the opportunities like this and other resources have allowed us not only to be on the ground and talk to people, but also give them the necessary things they need to be successful.
And so what are some of the practices that you'll continue to do as an organization when it's no longer necessary to do social distancing, or when the pandemic is just behind us?
We'll continue to provide opportunities for jobs. And as we all know, the unemployment rate has skyrocketed. So the numbers that we're used to serving will probably double and triple. Mm-hmm. So, I think we're going to see a different, not just a different Baltimore, but a different Maryland, a different country that keep doing the work around jobs and build up. Turnaround Tuesday does and build, then to keep being that organization that people can come to when they know that somebody has to fight for something. So we'll continue to do what we do, and then know the need is just going to be even greater.
Are you seeing different types of people reach out to Turnaround Tuesday since the pandemic started?
We are. One of the first questions you asked was what was the racial population? We're actually starting to see white participants. We're starting to see Hispanic participants. So the demographics are changing because now, again, when a fifth of the community was unemployed, now it might be three-fifths. So, you know, the job market, the people that are competing for the entry-level jobs is now changing. So, you know, I think seeing a different group of people coming through the door and more folks is the challenge that's ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. And so what percentage of your members are women?
I would say we have about a 52-48 men, so 48%.
And has it been staying about that steady since the coronavirus started?
I don't think we saw and I've seen a real shift.
Okay. And do you think that you'll continue having the meetings on Zoom once you're able to meet in person as well?
No. We can't wait to get back. Now, we're in no rush to get back, but when we get back, that's our, we'd rather be in person.
Mm-hmm. And so is it a matter of being able to have that personal connection more so than getting over maybe the literacy gap of using Zoom or even having access to this technology? Is it about being near those people and seeing them?
I think it's that. And, you know, to your point, you know, I'm not sure. We may look at a hybrid model as we move forward. Mm-hmm. I think now we've attracted a new population of people that we didn't have before. But we work better in person because, again, we have to have that contact with people. And that works better for us.
That makes sense. So, I know you talked a lot about how people in Baltimore are being really affected by the coronavirus. And I assume part of that is because it's such a Black city. And we know that Black people have been disproportionately affected by it. So I was wondering if you could tell me, how is your organization helping its members cope with the large loss of life in particular?
Wow. Well, as Bill, on the build side, Bill has, again, 40 institutions, and I would say about three quarters of those institutions are churches.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the church plays a key role in all this. And we know even home-going services and funerals have changed. I'm an active member of my church, and I think we're at 50% capacity. And, you know, to see home-going services aren't what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can't gather like they used to. So just helping folks understand that hopefully at some point this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's difficult. I mean, we're in difficult times. I mean, like I say, to think of our kids and what our children are going through, and it just is affecting everybody. And, you know, I think there have been some restrictions that have been loosened a little bit, and you know, people are getting out some. You know, maybe we'll see the results of that in a couple of weeks. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think being cautious and letting people know we have to walk through this slowly. One, because you don't know what you're getting out of Washington. I don't want to make this political. But, and, you know, even local leaders, you don't know what's real and what's not. And just really helping people understand that, you know, they just have to pay attention and be smart.
Mm-hmm. So how is your organization helping people stay educated about what's happening with the coronavirus?
So we at Turnaround Tuesday, again, with our case manager, we've reached out. We make daily phone calls to folks. We actually do a newsletter and put resources on the newsletter. Again, even just letting folks know that you need to wear their mask, educating them on, you know, where we are. We've helped people to apply for unemployment. So just understanding, you know, listening to people first. We never prescribe for people what they can do. And then helping them understand what is it they need to do to get things accomplished. So just being a resource, being a listening ear, and then wherever we can help, we jump in and help.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the resources that you think your members need to help cope with the coronavirus, whether it's the loss of life or the loss of jobs? What are some things that they need?
I think mental health is key, particularly if, again, people, you know, again, losing a loved one. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. My mom is in a nursing home, and they tested her, and supposedly she tested positive for COVID-19. Never had symptoms. She was asymptomatic. It was great. But, you know, just being and knowing that she's in an environment where for the longest time we haven't been able to visit. But, you know, helping people get through the unusualness of today, that, you know, people have died in hospitals and couldn't even say goodbye to their family members. You know, and then can come home and have a funeral that doesn't look the same. So, you know, it's been an emotional roller coaster for many of our people. The good thing with Turnaround Tuesday, again, we do have a case manager who actually has mental health therapy under her belt. That's really been able to help people navigate that side of it to get through the stress that's involved in this and really understanding, you know, the mental health side of it.
So what resources do you all need as the running the organization?
So again, PPEs was essential. You know, again, Chromebooks, laptops. We're finding out folks need to pay their bills. I mean, simple things. Typically, what we work with that are looking for jobs, they can't pay their phone bill, and many of them don't have computers. That was their access to getting online, to applying for jobs, to doing interviews. You know, we're learning that people don't even have the bare necessities of even, you know, as for granted as we take a phone bill. It used to be a luxury. Today is a necessity. So, you know, helping people pay their phone bills, people are getting behind on the rent. Again, there's a moratorium on it right now, but when they stop it, most people are going to be 5 or 6 months behind. And I'm not sure where the government's going to jump in on that, but you're going to see people getting evicted, helping people with getting, again, continue to get food. The food distribution that we were part of with Build and Hopkins ended on Wednesday, at least for now, and, you know, ran for 18 weeks. Now that's over. What are people going to do? You know, just food, basic necessities, PPEs, and then just basic mental health treatment.
And where do you primarily get financial support for Turnaround Tuesdays from?
Turnaround Tuesday, about 90% of our funding comes from foundations, grants. We apply for grants. The other 10% comes from contract work that we do for arts for training program, for the essential skills for art skills training.
And are most of these foundations local or national?
There's one national and the rest are local.
Okay. And have you seen any changes in how foundations themselves are operating because of the coronavirus?
So foundations, to their credit, locally they collaborated together and they provided COVID-19 relief. You know, I thought they really stepped up to the plate and did a really good job of knowing, understanding what the problems were. And they were able to disperse funds to help communities.
And so is that primarily how you're able to pay for the PPEs and the Chromebooks, was through the foundations?
Yes.
And so if you had an idea, how much has your workload increased? Because I know you talked about having a case worker. Is there just one?
We only have one. We're actually about to hire a second one. Our caseload has been crazy. We certainly don't have, we probably don't have the capacity to keep this pace up, to be honest. Because we get phone calls of people that before the pandemic hit, that didn't have jobs, and now people that lost their jobs are calling. So, again, when you ask the question about our numbers increasing, I might want to slightly change that number, because I forgot people that were either laid off or furloughed. We're getting calls from those folks that we've already helped before. They're coming back. You know, so the numbers have increased. So I do want to kind of change that answer.
And so what percentage of your staff is volunteer?
Zero.
Zero. Okay. Okay. And so are there plans to expand the staff? I know you talked about getting another caseworker.
Yes, we actually are about to hire a case manager and a retention specialist by the end of the month. So we've been fortunate where most organizations either laying folks off with furlough, and then we're actually adding, which is unusual. Mm-hmm. That's because of the work that's ahead of us.
And so that it was in response to the pandemic that you were able to expand?
No, we had actually, that was already in place before the pandemic. So we are actually probably looking at other opportunities to increase our capacity, because we know coming out of COVID-19 that jobs are going to be a huge hurdle for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. And on average, how long does it take you all to find one of your members a job?
So that depends on an individual. We try not to put a time in it, because everybody comes in with different barriers to employment. Mm-hmm. If someone came in and didn't have any barriers, I would say probably minimally 4 weeks, because mm-hmm. everything we need to do is relational. We have to know somebody. We certainly could send somebody for a job tomorrow, but is that person going to be successful? And are they going to represent Turnaround Tuesday in a positive light? We don't know. Mm-hmm. So our motto is the relational work, to get to know people. We do individual meetings with them. They're assessed. They go through the essential skills class, and then we would give them our stamp of approval. That's not meant to hold people back. That's one, to protect the integrity of the organization in the relationships with the institutions that we have, and then to make sure that person is ready to do well and survive in the environment they're going into.
Mm-hmm. And so has the timeline changed for job placement because of the coronavirus?
I would say it's probably a little shorter, because the 30-hour training right now is 16 hours on Zoom, and we can get accomplished in 1 week. And then, again, working with the job developer, and depending on the job openings, because at some point, some of these large institutions weren't hiring. Matter of fact, they were laying folks off. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to bring on people if you're laying people off. Mm-hmm. So jobs at some point were a scarcity. So we kind of shifted into jobs that were related to the virus, mm-hmm. contact tracing and testing and working in security around the temporary hospitals that were put up and things like that.
And so what industries have been hit the worst in Baltimore and have been the hardest for you to place new members in?
Certainly the hotel industry got hit. The food services industry got hit real hard. Restaurants. Even the hospitals had to shift. I mean, because people, they weren't doing surgeries and minor surgeries and appointments, doc's appointments. So it was a need for a lot of the people that were doing the entry-level positions, cleaning the hospitals and things like that. So it was a shift, a huge shift.
And do you just have a forecast of what do you think are going to be the jobs that are more readily available once the pandemic ends?
I think, again, hospitals to me has always been our niche, but I think the hospitals will see another shift when this is over. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, certainly the service industries, I think people, when they feel comfortable to get back to dining and, staying out and going out of town, I think we'll see that come back. Maybe not as vibrant as it was before the pandemic, but I think we have to get back to some sense of people enjoying their quality of life.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think has made Turnaround Tuesday so successful over the long number of years that you all have been around?
The one thing we're different than most workforce development entities is that we don't train folks for a certificate and say good luck. We have jobs. Mm-hmm. So we train folks for the jobs. So if someone comes to Turnaround Tuesday and they do everything that they're asked to do, they're going to walk away with a job. Again, we don't give out wallpaper for certificates. We're going to train you, we're going to prepare you, and we're going to put you into a job. I think it's the relational work where if, and I love workforce, and I'm not knocking workforce development entities, but a lot of times you go there and you can be there 5 months and they don't even know your name. Mm-hmm. Not only do we know your name, we know your story, your history, we probably know your family. You're going to know about me. I'm going to tell you who I am. So we can have that strong relationship. I'm no better than you are. Mm-hmm. So it's just that relational work and really being rooted into the people, into the community, and seeing the person first, I think separates us from everybody else.
And why did you all decide to take that approach and make it so different from other programs?
I come from a larger workforce development entity, and I guess being the original executive director, I knew firsthand what people were used to. And, you know, we just took a different approach, and particularly working with ex-offenders, where we had people that would apply for 17, 18 jobs a day and never even get an interview. So really challenging the leadership of these anchor institutions where people live in the footprint of these places and were never offered an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So we build approaches it from a power standpoint. Mm-hmm. Only way you're going to get things done is to operate from the top down. And to have these relationships with these presidents and CEOs of these institutions where they understand and have a responsibility at the same time to the community is what we've been able to drive through to these institutions. So we're just blessed to have these strong relationships now.
Mm-hmm. And how have you been able to develop some of these relationships with these big organizations and people?
So that's BUILD is a part of a larger organization called Industrial Areas Foundation. Mm-hmm. Organizers. So, you know, they learn how to organize. And mm-hmm. that's been the key help to Turnaround Tuesday. I've been in rooms with people that I would never imagine 10 years ago. And I'm comfortable in those rooms.
Mm-hmm. And so what previous experiences, have members in your organization have that have helped them cope with this moment in time? So I know you talked a lot about how the Freddie Gray and the uprising gave you an idea about where energy should be focused on. So how have other experiences helped prepare your organization for this moment?
Well, again, the organization BUILD itself has been around 40 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've been an integral part, particularly in Baltimore. We were part of a huge effort to build new schools here. Baltimore had the same schools ever since I've been here my whole life. I think the last school that was built, now they've built almost 28 schools in the last 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being a voice for the people, and I don't want to use the word advocacy because I'm not sure if that's what they use, but they're advocates and to make sure that people deserve what they are supposed to get. BUILD helped negotiate the TIF with Under Armour with Port Covington to build a city within inside a city where part of that TIF was we negotiated and mandated that 30% of the people on the jobs would be city residents. And that was the first time in the country that something like that has been negotiated. So again, if the city's going to give away their money, let's make sure city residents take advantage of the opportunities that are there. Mm-hmm.
So how have you been able to engage the youth in the community, whether it's volunteering or reaching out to your organization to help with jobs?
So Turnaround Tuesday, youth aren't necessarily part of Turnaround Tuesday, although over the last year and a half, we took upon the initiative of working to try to solve the squeegee kid problem in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's depending on who you talk to, whether it's a nuisance or people being misunderstood. We go back to the point where we see people as people, and these are kids, and a lot of them are on these corners for different reasons, some out of necessity, some out of just fear, and some out of a safe haven. So we're actually working on a project to help eradicate the so-called squeegee problem in Baltimore. So that's probably the limit of youth that we work with.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to tell me a bit more about what you all are doing?
We're in the early stages. I would like to reserve that for now.
Okay.
We're working with two or three other organizations in a collaborative. And we've spent the last year and a half really doing research and being on the ground and finding out who these individuals are, where they're coming from, what their family situations are. You know, we work with the police department as well as part of this initiative. Police department has actually been a huge part of Turnaround Tuesday too, where at one point we had seven or eight officers, not necessarily assigned to Turnaround Tuesday, but they were part of working in their districts and bringing people that needed job opportunities to Turnaround Tuesday. It's kind of dwindled down to one officer now, but the relationship is still there.
Okay. So in a perfect world, what would you like to see Turnaround Tuesday do in 2021? Hold on 1 second, you're muted.
I was on my phone and it mutes the Zoom call. I wasn't on it, but the phone rang and it mutes the Zoom call.
Oh, okay. So I was just asking, what would be your goals for 2021 for Turnaround Tuesday in a perfect world?
Wow. The goal would be get back in person first. That would be the first goal. And to really, I think we have to regroup and strategize on what the job market looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are, I think, like I said, I think the demographics are going to change some. We are working on a quality job initiative, really putting people in the quality job. Bill believes in living wage, so minimum wage jobs have never been part of Turnaround Tuesday. We always put folks into livable wage positions. We're really looking at, you know, do a needs assessment of the city. What are the industries that will be peaking, and how can we best serve our people to prepare them for those jobs? So 2021, we average right now about 200 placements a year. 2021, I'd love to see 300 job placement.
And so you talked about the demographics shifting, seeing more white people coming out and Hispanics using your services. As those demographics continue to change, what other organizations would you like to partner with in the future?
I would love to see the government do more. I think the city has a mayor's office of employment development. I would love to, Baltimore's about to transition to a new mayor. I'd like to see a new vision around jobs. We certainly put a large portion of the city budget into policing. I would love to see some of those funds shift into workforce development. I think the city is a key. I think we work with other nonprofits, you know, just relational on wherever their strengths are. We may refer somebody, to us, but just building a community of providers that can look at a person holistically and really find out what is the best organization for them to go to. And I think the city plays a key role in that. They could be kind of like the conductor of all that kind of work.
And so what relationships do you have at the state and federal level?
Limited, very limited. Limited to none.
Okay. So most of the focus is on Baltimore and the surrounding areas?
Yes.
Okay. And then what relationship do you have with other universities? I know you talked about Johns Hopkins University.
University of Maryland, we have a relationship there. Is that Morgan State University?
Mm-hmm.
That big smile.
Yes. Harvard Center, yeah. So I was glad to hear.
Yes.
Awesome. Cool. So if there was one thing that you could change about how your organization responded to the pandemic, or one thing you would like to do different if you could go back in time, what would it be?
It would be to go after resources earlier. I think we, in the first couple of weeks, and you know, I think the problem is the first couple of weeks, nobody knew what was going on. I mean, I think if we could have had a better understanding, we could approach it differently. I think that, again, going after funding is always key. I mean, unfortunately, you need money to do lot of the services, and to really find out additional resources where we could be a little more helpful for folks. Mm-hmm. And earlier. But again, this was unusual. It was new.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're doing so much amazing work with, I don't know how y'all are doing this with just 24 hours in the day. But it seems
so tired. I'm exhausted.
I can imagine. So what are you all doing to prepare for future waves of the coronavirus or other public health crises?
I don't think we would actually do anything different. I think we've kind of understood it now. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we know what it's need to do. You know, there's nothing we can really do on the health side of it, but just, you know, continue to tell people to stay protected and stay smart. But I think what we put in place operationally is doing what we want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one last question. We kind of really spent through all of these. What else should we know about your organization, about Turnaround Tuesdays, or just build in general? What should people know about what you all are doing?
I think Turnaround Tuesday and build an organization is one that can be trusted. Is first, I think people should be able to come to our organization and know that we're never going to turn them away. If we can't help them, we certainly will. Hopefully gear them in a direction where they can be helped. I just think people need to know that it works.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with me today.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you in Baltimore or are you somewhere else?
I am in Cincinnati, Ohio, but my poppy is from the Baltimore area. So I don't know how he ended. I'm from Cleveland originally. I'm not sure how he ended up from Baltimore to Cleveland, though. But his family came to Cleveland during the Great Migration. I don't really understand that.
It's a great city.
Wait, Baltimore or Cleveland? Cleveland is. Baltimore. So is Baltimore. Yeah, it is. I don't understand why he would leave warmer weather for Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland's an interesting place.
It is. And we are going through a lot of the same things that are happening in Baltimore, especially around policing, but just gentrification. Cleveland, it got hit by the recession, the 2008 recession, basically in 2000. And it's been gentrified in very, very interesting ways. They haven't been able to gentrify all of it, but what they have gentrified, you can't really be Black and go around there anymore, which is sad, including our downtown.
I can imagine. Yeah, Build has a sister organization in Cleveland.
Oh, which one?
I have to get back to you on that. This thing is like CBO or something like that, they call it. If you Google search the IF and ask for the Cleveland affiliate, it will let you know.
Okay.
Because actually, the organizer here at Build also organizes in Cleveland as well.
Okay. And where did that connection come from?
Just the Industrial Areas Foundation. They have over, I think, affiliates in almost every state. And actually across the border as well.
Oh, and is it a nonprofit or?
Nonprofit, yes. So it's Industrial Areas Foundation. It started in Chicago under Saul Alinsky.
Mm-hmm.
And just grew, I think like Obama was an organizer. They're organizers. So very strong organization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very cool. And do you know when they were founded?
I know Build has been around 40 years, and I know IF has been around longer than that. So I would say minimally, not to know that, I don't know off the top of my head, but probably at least 50 years.
And how long has Transforming Tuesday been around?
Turnaround Tuesday.
Hmm?
You said Turnaround Tuesday.
I don't know why I said Transform. I'm like reading my notes. Yes, Turnaround Tuesday.
Turnaround Tuesday's been around for 6 years.
Okay, awesome. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much. So
is there a part two?
No.